Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
My guest today writes that her life has been called weird and mysterious, strange and bizarre, but has also been called inspirational and fascinating. Athena Dimitrios had a 30-year career in the film industry as a makeup artist in Los Angeles. She now lives in Chico, where her daughter and grandchildren are professional horse trainers. She writes about her psychic phenomena and mystical visions and facilitates seminars in higher consciousness. She has written a book about her spiritual odyssey, Walking Between Worlds. Athena Dimitrios, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy.
You know, I'd like you to read your introduction because I just said the title of your book is Walking Between Worlds. So would you read the beginning of your introduction for us?
I walk between worlds, and I love it. I see spirits as if they were in the physical realm, and I talk to them as friends. I am a telepath, clairvoyant, a medium and channel, a voice for others who dwell in states of consciousness other than our own. I see the auras of plants and trees, and at times, those who are guardians of them. And if I have embraced any philosophy in life, it would be to believe is to see. Pull on the thread, I always say, and see where it leads. I see nothing abnormal about piercing the veil between dimensions, looking through windows into other worlds. To me, it's the natural evolution of my most silent and sacred prayer, to feel connected to life.
This is author Athena Dimitrios, and she's reading from her book, Walking Between Worlds, A Spiritual Odyssey. And I think people would be saying, what? What did she say? And even the famous actress Shirley MacLaine, when she wrote a book, she called it Out on a Limb, because you are going out on a limb in some respects, Athena, to write a book like this. Did you have that feeling that it took courage to write this book?
Absolutely. It took courage then, and it takes courage now, because there's nothing like stripping yourself naked and letting people get a good view through a magnifying glass. And there's a level of vulnerability when one speaks their truth and doesn't hide behind something. Writing the book, that was the biggest challenge. But I felt in my heart this was something that I needed to do. And if I was going to do it, then I had to be gut level, honest, to the bone.
Well, when you're telling this story, it also involves other family members. For example, I mentioned that your daughter and grandchildren are professional horse trainers. They have a career training horses. And I wondered if you were able to use her real name when you were telling this story.
Yes.
So when you say Tina,
that's my daughter.
That's your daughter's real name. Because sometimes when people write a memoir, they have to get permission or they need to change the names. But Tina was behind you writing this book, apparently.
She was. Her path has been completely different, and she's a horse trainer up in Oregon. They moved up to Oregon. But yeah, she's behind me, and I am certainly behind her with that. Some people in the book, I've obviously changed name for protection for them. Family members, no, that was all right with them.
Well, speaking of your family, a name like Athena Dimitrios begs the question, my gosh, that's such a Greek name. Is that the name you were born with, Athena?
No, it was not. I always said it was my name from the moment I heard it. It felt like an old slipper to me. My father, who was Greek, wanted to name me Athena. My mother stuck me with Anita. And I always said Athena was my name. And I took our root name back, Dimitrios, back legally, so that's my name.
Because that was your dad's name.
Yes.
Well, I'd like for you to read about your dad, because he seems such an interesting character in your life. And you describe your father in your book. So would you read that section? It starts with, my father, Dimitrios V. Dimitrios, a Greek immigrant with almost no command of the English language.
My father, Dimitrios V. Dimitrios, a Greek immigrant with almost no command of the English language, had wanted to name me Athena. I have heard that the soul chooses the name and that the parents simply become receptive to the request and honor it in the physical dimension. Either my mother was deaf or I had a lot of growing to do until I became the vibration of who I am. I knew Athena was my name from the moment I heard it, and it felt to me like an old slipper that held the indentation of every toe worn to absolute comfort through the ages. I never knew my father, for he was to become an elusive stranger who would show up at times without warning, suitcase in hand, box of Hershey bars packed snugly amongst the stack of neatly folded shirts. Funny, the thing one remembers, like the way his clothes always smelled of cigar smoke, and how his attempt to settle into a situation would eventually overwhelm him, and that it was only a short time until the lack of order and the chaos sent him packing. To Mother, his parting words were, "Used to see me when used to see me." She never knew when that would be, and neither did he. Once I pushed the screen door open and followed him outside. He was unaware of my presence. I stood on the ledge of our porch and watched my father walk toward some unknown destination. He never looked back, and I never looked away. It was in those moments of silent observation that I could feel how lost he was. His demeanor flooded my senses with a knowing of who he was, who he wished he was, but the most telling of all, who he felt like he never was. His head wasn't held with purpose or pride, but rather cast downward towards the sidewalk. The weight of his suitcase caused him to walk slightly off kilter, and his footsteps seemed slow and labored. He knew this journey would be arduous and without direction, and so did I. I could feel his spirit was broken, and that his heart felt as heavy as the luggage that contained his worldly belongings. That made me feel sad. I watched my father disappear from sight.
This is author Athena Dimitrios, reading from her memoir, Walking Between Worlds, A Spiritual Odyssey. So, Athena, you say that your father was Greek, and he had a very Greek name.
Yes.
A name which you took. You were born Anita James, mm-hmm. but you became Athena Dimitrios.
James is the American translation of Dimitrios.
Yeah, there are a lot of languages, Spanish, where you might not recognize St. James mm-hmm. as what it is. So you really adhered to the name James, but in Greek.
I did. I always felt connected to it, feel connected to it now. It's, you know, it's my name and my heritage.
And you refer to, you said, "I had a lot of growing to do until I became the vibration of who I am." How do you explain that, Anita? Because one of my favorite quotes is by Nikola Tesla, who said, "If you want to know the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration." And here you mention vibration. How do you explain that to people? The vibration of who you are.
Well, I feel, and I can't speak for other people, just myself, but in my own journey in life, discovering who I am and really what made me tick, getting comfortable in my own skin. And I believe that that opens up so many other levels of awareness. And when we open up to that awareness, then I think we do begin to settle into what we're about, who we are, what perhaps our passion is in life. We become more aligned with that. And to me, that's an alignment of being more in tune with the energy of who you are.
Well, after you tell us who your father was, you tell us about your mother.
Mm-hmm.
So would you read us what you wrote about your mother? Your mother's name was Ruth, by the way.
Yes, it was Ruth. And I just want to say real quickly here that my mother was just a phenomenal storyteller. And that was a wonderful time with her. I loved these moments with Mom, for it wasn't often that I could have her attention. And when I could, I took full advantage of it, prodding her relentlessly for one story after another. She set the coffee cup on the fireplace mantel and stooped over to grab a large piece of wood that had been stacked in the corner of the hearth. She shoved the wood into the dying embers with a force that scattered gray ashes with pieces of half-burnt newspaper in a frenzied movement of explosive color. The pitch began to sizzle, and in a few moments, the wood burst into flame. Mother settled herself on the bench, crossing her legs, leaning forward to rest an elbow on a knee. I watched her squirm back and forth as if trying to root herself in a firm foundation, like a hen preparing to sit on a nest of unhatched eggs, a ritual in its own right. I kept quiet. I did not want to disturb the memories being brought into focus for voice. In a strange way, I felt something almost sacred about these moments, for her face reflected emotions that she was totally unaware of. With her coffee cup in one hand, she turned towards the fire, and her face was bathed in a saffron glow. I listened to her sigh as she struck the wooden match across a blackened brick to light a cigarette. Lifting her hand to push a limp strand of hair back into place, she tilted her head slightly as if to arm herself with a sense of dignity in a situation that had none. She inhaled deeply on the Pall Mall, holding the smoke in her lungs. I watched as it escaped from her lips. After quiet deliberation, she began. "Well, let's see now. I can remember one time when I was 3 years old and Mother was giving me a bath in an old galvanized tub. The house was toasty and warm, and I could see the red-hot coals peeking out from the old pot-bellied stove. It was winter then, and we were having a blizzard." She paused and stared off into space, and for a moment her eyes grew vacant, as if she were suspended in another time and place. Realizing that she had drifted off, she shook her head. "Good God, was Mother Nature merciless. All of a sudden, a gust of wind blew the front door open, and I was hit by this icy blast of powdery fine snow that stung my skin. I looked up and saw this tall figure hesitating in the doorway. He was dressed in black, and his face was gaunt, and his skin was ashen gray. His beard and mustache were covered with ice, and I'll never forget the sound of the wind howling as it whipped his coat frantically around his legs. He looked like the Grim Reaper. Mother stopped washing me, and I remember him saying with exhaustion in his voice, 'Hello, baby. He came home to die.' That's all I remember of my father," she said as she wiped a tear from the corner of her eye.
This is Athena Demetrios reading from her book, Walking Between Worlds, and she was just reading about her mother. And Athena, when I was reading the book, I was ambivalent. I would go back and forth a bit. Do I like this woman or do I not like this woman? Your mother I'm talking about.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
And I couldn't decide how I felt about your mother, because one minute I think, oh, what a nice lady. And the next I think, why didn't she do more to protect her children?
Well, it's a good question. My mother just simply couldn't cope. And I think now that I have, you know, I'm now 72. And looking back, could I have done any better? They lost a tremendous fortune, and with seven kids to raise on minimum wage, I don't know whether I could have done any better. But she always, always opened up our home to other kids, you know, that were unhappy or needed a place to stay. And she'd always say, well, I guess one more mouth to feed won't make any difference. So there was a very, very beautiful part of my mother.
My guest is Athena Demetrios, and she is author of A Spiritual Odyssey, Walking Between Worlds. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest today is a former makeup artist with the film industry who has written a book, Walking Between Worlds. The poverty that you underwent is staggering, Athena. Mm-hmm. When I look across the table now, you'd never know that you had the experiences you did as a child. Mm-hmm. And the descriptions of what it was like to be that poor, it's just hard to believe.
Yeah. Yes, it was. But, you know, thank God we were able to laugh about a lot of it.
Well, and then you lived in different places before you moved to Chico.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like for you to read what it was like when you and your family came to Chico. You were in the town of Anderson before that. You said you were there in Anderson about a year. And then you said you'd never forget the day your father found us, because he was in and out of your life. Your father found you and moved you to Chico.
I don't know how long we stayed in the town of Anderson, perhaps a year, but I will never forget the day my father found us and moved us to Chico, California. My God, it was as if the heavens parted and the Calvary came riding in on the clouds. Maybe Mom had been right after all. Perhaps knights in shining armor did exist. If ever there was a time that my father redeemed himself in the eyes of Mother, it was then, as short-lived as it was. As we pulled into the town and drove down the tree-lined boulevard, it was as if we had come upon a green, lush oasis. It was the most beautiful place I had ever seen. I felt as if we had been delivered from the clutches of some black force, and all of a sudden, hope was alive in our hearts. We moved into a house on Broadway, not one we had to be ashamed of. There was a green lawn and sidewalks, cement steps that led up to a big porch with some pillars, edges to sit on, flowering bushes, hydrangeas in colors of bluish violet and pink. Although school had started 3 weeks earlier, my sister and I lagged a little longer, waiting to get our first welfare check so we could buy shoes. I asked my sister Judy once, when we were little, were things as bad as I remember? Worse, she said flatly.
This is Athena Demetrios, and she has just read the day that she and her family moved to Chico. They had left Oregon, so part of your story takes place in Oregon, part of it in Chico, and then Southern California. So how did you get to Southern California, Athena?
Makeup was my passion and my love, and I entered into the world of cosmetics as a career. I went to work for Revlon, and Revlon ended up moving me to Los Angeles, and so I was with them for several years, and then I pursued a career in makeup in the film. So well, I was down there for about 30 years.
That sounds like a dream job. I mean, young women, teenagers who are interested in makeup, and here you get what sounds like a dream job for a young woman.
It was, but you really pay your dues as well. I think the determination not to give up on something that you feel so aligned with, that excites you, will open the door eventually. I think the universe just has a way of doing that. Revlon, when I worked with them, that was a good job. But I really wanted to be a makeup artist in the film industry. That's what I wanted. So eventually that door did open, and that became a career, 30 years.
So you were able to schedule this. There would be times where you'd maybe go out of town on location. Is that the nature of your job as a makeup artist?
Yes, it was. And I really made a decision to begin to focus in the world of commercials because I could be home with my daughter and the jobs were a little bit shorter in duration. And you know, made a good wage, certainly, for that. And then I became very connected to certain production companies that I worked with over and over again. I did do some film, and leaving and going on location was more of a challenge at times.
Well, we just mentioned when you were young and you and a schoolgirl and mm-hmm. lived in Chico, and now we've jumped to Southern California, and you mentioned a daughter. So how did your daughter come on the scene?
I had my daughter when I was 17. I was a junior in high school, and that was my first love, and there's more of that in the book. And back then—
And this was Chico now, when you were in school at Chico.
This was in Chico, and it was a social taboo to have a child.
But you were going to marry this guy, her father.
Well, that didn't work out. So I raised her, you know, by myself, and ended up dropping out of school and put myself through beauty school and had a child to raise. So that was a big challenge. And, of course, when I went to Los Angeles, of course, she was with me. But, yes, it all started here in Chico.
So you moved to Southern California with your daughter, Tina, mm-hmm. which you said it's okay to use her real name.
Oh, yes, of course.
And you have this career. You did this for 30 years, mm-hmm. Athena?
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, there were all these magical, do I use that word?
Very much so. In my life, yes.
Things that were happening to you while you had this career.
Yes.
And there were turning points in your life because you weren't always really very happy in some of those earlier years. Did you reach the point of wanting to commit suicide?
Oh, yes, I did. And because, well, the earlier part of my life, especially when I was under 10, there were a lot of childhood rapes. And that kind of trauma was something that I really pushed down. I became very suicidal. I was deeply depressed. I didn't understand the source of it. I did have a specific memory extremely clear.
Because you had suppressed this memory.
Well, I memories.
The details.
The details, because they did happen repeatedly. But I had a very specific and very clear memory to a certain point, and then it was like watching a television program turn to snow. And I always had this strong feeling with it. When I was 1979 was the pivotal point when my life turned upside down. It became my defining moment in life. Everything changed. Everything. It was after that period of time that I did make a decision to go back and heal and to explore that. So, yes, I was continuing to work in the film industry while I was
going
exploring.
On.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that took courage because there's a reason you suppressed these memories. They were so unpleasant that it took courage to want to dig these up and find out what happened after that point that I can't remember. I get up to a point and then the screen goes blank, so to speak. So who helped you? You must have had help getting across, getting through that barrier, if I want to call it a barrier. Who helped you?
I would have to say it was a defining moment. I do believe that there comes a time in our life, certainly in mine, I can't speak for other people, where we come up against a wall and we don't have an eighth of an inch to turn. We have to face ourselves. And I had become very bitter, very angry, pushing people away, thinking I was self-protecting. And it was all for self-protecting. But then there were a series of three events that transpired, literally brought me to my knees. And that's when everything changed, because I said, if life hurts this bad, the cause has to be within me. And that was a turning point. After that, there were a series of very magical, metaphysical events that transpired that I couldn't even comprehend what was happening at the time, because they were so out of left field for me. And I knew something was going on my life on such a deep level. And I also knew that not giving up was not an option, that I couldn't saddle my daughter with committing suicide and leaving that for her to deal with. I could not do that. And so I began to explore healing. I wanted to heal. Everything in me knew from the time I was a little kid that life was not meant to be lived with a lot of pain. It was not meant to be lived this way. And so I was willing to do anything I had to do to heal. And if that meant going back and looking at that, then I was willing to do that.
My guest is Athena Demetrios, and she had a 30-year career as a makeup artist in Southern California, in Hollywood, and she has written a book, Walking Between Worlds, A Spiritual Odyssey. So going back to this idea of between worlds, mm-hmm. your dad died. The day you buried your dad, you kind of had a glimpse into this other world. And I'd love for you to read that for
Absolutely.
Us, Athena.
Let's see here. Yes, I just want to say my mother had been crying all day. And there were some strange events that had happened during the day. All was quiet now. Mother was asleep, spent, and exhausted. I felt like a limp rag that had been wrung out. I lay in bed and thought about death. What was it like to be dead? No soul, nothing. A no thing. What was the point in life? In life, I felt dead. None of it made any sense to me. Eventually, I fell asleep. Tina's piercing wail brought me to consciousness. God, not now, I thought to myself. It seemed as if I had just fallen asleep. I lay there listening, hoping she would go back to sleep, but her cry became angry and insistent, like when she wanted a bottle or to have her diaper changed. I kicked off the covers and swung my legs around to the side of the mattress and sat on the edge of the bed. I looked up, and adrenaline shot through my body. My heart began pounding hard and fast. He stood in the doorway, slowly turning his head from left to right, his body completely lit by the bathroom light. I threw the covers over my head, full of fear as my daughter continued to wail. My breathing became rapid and fast. "Wake up!" I repeated the command. "Wake up!" But I wasn't asleep. I was wide awake. I finally mustered the courage and pulled the covers down enough to peek out of the corner of my eyes. He stood there, staring back at me. I was paralyzed with fear. It was Dad. We had buried him that day.
This is Athena Dimitrios reading about the day they buried her dad, and she was, how old were you then?
I was 19.
So you were 19, and you had had Tina when you were 17, so she's just a baby in her crib, and your mother was asleep, and Tina was crying, and you see this, what some people would call an apparition.
No, he was. They would say he was an apparition, but he was very, very clearly in the doorway. And I'm sure many of the listening audience can relate to the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore. That's how I see spirit. And that's the way I saw my father.
On the day he was buried.
On the day he was buried. Very, very. He was very physical. He was light. His body was of light, but I could see his complete clothing and the way he was looking, and yeah.
So through the years, if you're seeing things that other people are not able mm-hmm. to see, did your dad appear to you subsequent to this day he was buried?
To the day he was buried?
After this day that you just read about.
Yes. My father... Well, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but my father, I had another connection with my father at one of the most pivotal points in my life where I really thought I can't do it, I can't make it. And I found myself in another dimension, and my father was there and came up and held me. And it was all of this light that just flooded from his heart through mine. And there were some mystical events around that. I do want to say that so many of these gifts, and I'm going to call them gifts that I brought in, began to wake up when I was a young teenager. I didn't understand what was happening at that point. But that's really when they started to unfold. After my defining moment, 1979, they took off like a rocket ship. Psychically, I took off like a rocket ship. So I was encountering a parallel world, in a sense, while I was continuing to work in the film industry.
Well, how did you navigate this between the world, as your title says, walking between worlds? How did you do that? Because it seems like you would have to have outside assistance, that you could do some things for yourself, but then there were people in your life who aided you, guided you, if I want to say that, along this path.
Well, certainly. I became a channel for a wonderful spiritual guide, you might say. And I think we all have guides, whether there could be a next-door neighbor who says something extremely wise that just opens you up in a way. I studied with various teachers and began to hone some of those gifts. And so that's how, you know, that's how that began. And some of them were very much of like mind. And so that conversation became very comfortable for me, that world.
Probably helped that you were at that time in Southern California, because mm-hmm. I think access to these kinds of people was easier where you were living at that time.
Absolutely. And I also feel that there is a beautiful, seamless synchronicity in life that transpires, that when you're meant to meet the right person, you'll cross paths with them.
And well, that reminds me of a place in your book where somebody gives you three books.
Yes.
And you say, when the time is right, these things happen. And this person says, you're ready for this, talking to you, Athena. Mm-hmm. As he placed three books in my hands, I was ready for something, anything that would make sense out of my life. I felt as if I were preparing to die, as the need to get my house in order was so pronounced. There was something mystical about the events that had transpired. I felt as if I were transported to another planet, for all familiarity had gone out the window. And so I'd like for you to read this paragraph in your book where you curled up on the couch to open one of these books, because you mentioned energy mm-hmm. in there. Like I mentioned this quote from Tesla. You mentioned earlier your vibration, that you became who you mm-hmm. were. And then in here, in this paragraph, you mentioned this flow of energy. So would you read that paragraph for us, Athena?
Sure. It was only through our ignorance and misuse of this energy that this pure state of energy is constantly interrupted. For if it were allowed to flow on its way undisturbed, we would experience peace, love, harmony, and abundance, for that's the natural state of life, that we are given free will to direct the source energy through our thought and feeling in any direction that we choose.
This reminds me somewhat of the Tao Te Ching. Mm-hmm. It has so many images of letting things flow rather than resist, say, you're a rock in a stream. You don't resist it. You let the water flow around you, and you don't try to stop this flow of energy. And you say this in this paragraph, that when this energy is allowed to flow undisturbed, mm-hmm. we experience peace, love, harmony, and abundance, for that was the natural state of life.
Yes, and I used to go up to the covered bridge, and right there is a troubled teenager.
The covered bridge here out from Chico.
Oh, yes, yes. And I would sit there after I would write, and I would feel this sense of peace. And I would think to myself, well, if there is this source energy, if we are connected to something, it has to be closer to this, because there's nothing about this moment right now that feels full of hate or fear or greed, and I call those sometimes the human emotions. But I believe in my heart that that energy, which is that source energy, is the part of us that is kind, that is good, that is compassionate, that is caring, that does want to see well for other people. And I feel that that's the part, if it were allowed to just flow forth, call it the master within, if it were allowed to flow forth undisturbed, then there is a natural flow and a synchronicity, and life becomes so much easier.
My guest today is Athena Dimitrios, who is a former makeup artist with the film industry in Los Angeles, and she now writes about psychic phenomena and mystical visions. Her book is Walking Between Worlds. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman.
Thank you.
I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm here with my guest, Athena Dimitrios, and she writes about psychic phenomena. Her life has been called weird and mysterious, but it's also been called inspirational and fascinating. Will you also say in your book, I can never buy into the concept of organized religion. Mm-hmm. And I notice people who teach college students here at Chico State say that that's one of the things that these college students are saying, that they are not religious, but they are spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would think that your book could help open people's eyes, like these young people who are searching not for religion, but for spiritual side of themselves. And I would think your book would help these people who are seeking, would help to open their eyes as to, here's what's possible as a human being.
Definitely. And I want to also say that I have great respect for all different religions, because I feel that there's truth in all of them. I do.
Because some of the things you said are a part of various religions.
Sure. And I also feel that the way I look at it, it's like the limbs on a tree. And everything leads back to source energy. It does, you know. Ultimately, source energy, love. It's the highest law in the universe, love. And we're part of that. And again, I think that's the part of us that is the kind and caring and good. And whatever religion, or perhaps it's a spiritual philosophy that someone's attracted to, they're attracted to it for a reason. And I think the natural evolution of life is to expand. And when people begin to seek more, then their soul is going to be attracted to what's going to bring them the answers that's appropriate for them at that time.
My guest is Athena Dimitrios, and she's a former makeup artist in Southern California who now lives in Chico. And her book is A Spiritual Odyssey, Walking Between Worlds. Now, in these various experiences that you had as you are developing, evolving as a spiritual person, if I want to call it that, what kinds of experiences did you seek out?
You know, that's interesting. I think the experiences actually started to, I think it was almost like being magnetized by something that I was being pulled or tugged to explore. And I always say, I'll always pull on that thread. I'll always explore that. The work that I did to recover and regain and become empowered, once again, from my childhood experiences, opened up an incredible amount of experiences for me. And, you know, from that, it was just almost being catapulted from one to another. They just almost tumbled over on top of each other. I experienced past lives. Again, seeing spirits, helping them cross over.
Yeah, because these opportunities would come your way. You describe you just going along minding your own business.
Right.
And you would be aware of this spirit who, should I use the word lost? They were lost. They weren't where they would be if they knew how to
exactly
get to that place. And what did you do?
Well,
give
I
us
would,
an example of how you helped somebody.
All right. One time we were filming, and this was in the Doheny Mansion in Beverly Hills. And it's highly unusual when you're filming not to have the crew hustling, bustling around you and carrying cables and so on and so forth. I happened to be sitting out in the foyer. Nobody was around, highly unusual. And I was thinking, my gosh, what a beautiful place this is, and highly unusual as well that I had never shot there before. And I always get an electrical current that flows through my body before the vibration changes or source energy is changing. And I call that the doorbell ringing. I turned my head and looked to the left, and I saw a spirit or a ghost. He was looking around a corner, and he said to me, please help me. Now I know I was sitting alone, right? So I got up and went down, and as soon as I walked past him and went into the library there, I knew why he was there. that that's a place in life that he felt very safe. And so I did what I know how to do, and I usually invoke the angelic realm. And they came and got him, and he went enveloped in love and light. And so that became very common for me, very common. I happened to be driving past our cemetery
on in
Mangrove.
Chico.
Yes, on Mangrove, and had that same electrical current, and I turned my head and I saw a little golden orb, and I thought, I think that's a child down there. So I went down, this was about a week later, I heard a voice in my head that said, go to the cemetery, and I went to the cemetery and walked up, and there was a little child who had died. She was born in 1942 and died in 1945. And she was sitting there on the corner of her grave. And I thought she was probably there because of her mother's grief.
So her mother's grief was
holding her
earthbound
there. Mm-hmm.
And keeping her from moving on
yes.
to where she should be, if we want to use that
right,
term.
Yeah.
And so what did you do for this little girl?
Well, it's what I always do. I call in the angelic realm and those of, Christ and other wonderful guides or masters, and there are those that will help assist them to the highest realm that they can go to.
Well, now you just mentioned a name affectionately.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Christ affectionately. Mm-hmm. And in your book, you don't always feel affection for this character that we called Jesus.
Well, that was a lifetime that came up, and again, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but this came up in great depth and detail, and I had always had these feelings that I never understood around Christ as a young child, but I could never watch, and I still can't, a flogging or, I'll bolt like a rabbit from a room. And while under hypnosis, working with this doctor, I went back to that lifetime automatically without being guided. I just went back. And so that one was in great depth and detail with that. And of course, they, believe that Christ is such a highly evolved master. And that was a great healing that transpired for me, and also of the judgment that I had carried about myself from that lifetime. So anyway, but it does go into that in great depth and detail.
My guest is Athena Dimitrios, and she has just been describing how she learned about past lives, and you sought out, there was a doctor who would help you under hypnosis, correct?
Well, when I sought out Dr. Slavin, and I did that by intuition, and I just want to say that anybody that has experienced any kind of trauma, that if they are feeling the desire or feeling pulled to go back and explore that, then that's coming up for a reason. I say always find a very qualified therapist that can help you navigate that storm, and that it's a process, and that you'll survive, and you'll go through all these emotions, the anger and the rage. All of that is part of healing, to let it be. And with Dr. Slavin, we used hypnosis because my defenses were so strong, and I went under so deeply, and that's when we began to go back and do all of that work with the childhood and the childhood rapes. And so grateful. I am so grateful that I did that work.
So you went back to past lives, like several centuries ago, but you also went back just in this life.
Oh, yes.
To clear up some of the trauma that you experienced that you could not on your own force yourself to look at.
Well, and again, I can't speak for other people, but I feel like it's almost impossible to be objective about your own trauma, because what I really learned from that was that I was viewed life through decisions that I had made as a child that colored everything. They colored the way I saw people, the relationships. I'll get hurt. I can't let someone close. I have to keep them at arm's length. And all of that was exposed for the need to protect myself. And as children, whatever kind of trauma, whether it's physical or sexual or verbal abuse, sometimes we disassociate as a way to survive. And that's fine when you're a child, but when you're an adult, it doesn't work. And if you want intimacy in relationships, it's almost, I think it's very difficult to have any kind of a really intimate relationship where you let someone in to really touch your heart if you are so afraid of having that heart broken again. So it was very important. And the other lifetimes, and there were so many events that came up, simply happened when we started to explore that. Now, I also went back when he put me under, I went back to my life prior to being born. And I was surrounded by all of these masters and teachers, and they were showing me where I was going to be going.
And you wanted no part of it.
Oh, it's like, oh, no, no, you know. But I saw this family. They were showing me a family. But what was important, they were showing me how I could change in this lifetime. And it just, from that perspective, it was almost overwhelming. It was like, how am I going to be able to survive all of this? Because my events, there's been so many events in my life. But I always felt, Nancy, in my heart, that there was a reason that I went through this. And I am able now to feel so blessed that I did that kind of work. And I'm...
Well, speaking of being blessed, we mentioned your mother and dad, mm-hmm. but you had siblings. And
yes.
One in particular was you were very close to. And
Judy.
I'd like to give you a chance to mention the role she played in your life.
Oh, Judy was, I always say she was my brightest light in my darkest night. And she was a stepsister, a half-sister, and my mother's former marriage. But we were so bonded in the heart. And Judy took care of us while Mother worked. And She quit school at 14 to take care of us, but she was highly intelligent, self-taught, and I just absolutely adored her. I used to sit and watch her put on her makeup, and that's when I decided I wanted to be a makeup artist. She looked to me like Grace Kelly, and she was just beautiful. But yeah, I adored her. But I have a good relationship with all my siblings, and we can always get together and laugh about the absurdity and the depth of the poverty. And
yeah,
so it's great.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you,
Athena,
about your book. Again, the title of the book is Walking Between Worlds, A Spiritual Odyssey, and the author is Athena Dimitrievs.
And just on closing, if I can say something real quick, that if somebody is looking to explore, you know, the any kind of trauma, your light can outshine any shadow in your world, and you're strong enough to do it. That's it.
And now Anthony Peyton Porter has some words to say about death.
Death. I have been thinking rather a lot about death lately. Have you heard the chestnut about Grandma reading the Bible as a way of cramming for her finals? Like that. So being an old guy with one out and nobody on in the top of the ninth, I spend a fair amount of time thinking about the after party. I don't think that this is all there is. As far as I can remember, all the religions with which I have a nodding acquaintance believe that this life we more or less share is just a temporary drop-off on an eternal journey. Of course, religious differences can involve any number of things, from whether we've been alive before to what happens afterward, not to mention what we ought to be doing while we're fumbling around here and now. Still, most of us agree that this life is not the end of everything. And on this one, I'm with the majority. It's apparently the end of our personalities, and good riddance in some cases, but not the end of some essence that continues no matter what happens to our physical bodies. Let's call it Rover. I do get hints now and then that maybe I've experienced something like this before. I don't mean this current persona I've cobbled together this time around. I don't think I've done this particular number before. It's just that some feelings are eerily familiar and trigger sensations I can't explain, other than by accepting that a lot has gone on of which I'm only hazily aware. Of course, the older I get, the more that's true anyway, which complicates things. I was baptized, confirmed, and reared in the Episcopal Church, and I know enough about Christianity to reject most flavors, mostly because they were made up long after the fact. They use way too many words, and they pretend Jesus was a Christian, which, of course, he wasn't. Too much extrapolation. Jesus seems not to have said much, or at least nobody's even claiming to know much of whatever he said. And when it comes to the basics, including death and the hereafter, I think Jesus and a few others got it right. There's love and the kingdom within and eternal life, and you get what you believe. The rest is politics. For most of my life, the question for me has been, when all this looks like more trouble than it's worth, why not just punch out and go sitteth on the right hand of the metaphorical Father, leaving the rest of you to fend for yourselves, which is what we all have to do anyway? I don't know, except for the part about getting what you believe. That's what stops me. And that's where I begin all over again and again, to try to remember the parts about love and the kingdom within and eternal life. Did I mention forgiveness? So I've settled on being a Jesus imitator. Very tricky, but God's illiterate, so at least it's simple. See you in the afterlife. I'm Anthony Peyton Porter.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.